think the timing of the presentations is going to work out really well, because I'm going to talk about something that is going to contrast what they're doing at Oklahoma State, but is also similar in a lot of ways. We have a university-based program that's supported solely by our department from the fees that we charge and by private donations. And we, on the other hand, stay in our visitor center, and we don't travel, for the most part, to other places. So I'm going to kind of show how we manage with our system. And I'd like to kind of explain how I ended up in this position. I had a dual bachelor's in horticulture and marketing and was working in garden centers in the area where I grew up. And I really loved the extension type of work that I could do in a garden center, and teaching people about plants and soil and bugs and identification and weeds. And I ended up back at Kansas State University for a master's degree in entomology. I had a minor in entomology as an undergrad. And as I was finishing that, looking for a job to be an extension agent, I ended up taking this job as a zoo coordinator. So I kind of feel what I do has a lot to do with extension. And basically, we just educate the public, and we answer a lot of questions, and we promote awareness and conservation. And that kind of leads into our mission, which I'll talk about in a minute. I love Calvin and Hobbes, had to put that in. So an overview of the talk, I'm going to talk about our mission and our history. We're a fairly new facility. We've only been officially dedicated by the university since 2002. We're going to talk about our audience and who is visiting our zoo, the methods that we use to communicate our mission of conservation to our visitors, and then some of the feedback we've got with some of the survey tools that we've used for our visitors. So our mission statement, which was written either by Ralph Charlton or Sunny Ramaswamy, we're not sure who to give credit to, really does sum up what we try to do. And it has a definite environmental slant to it. We really do try to promote conservation. And then my personal mission at the zoo, these are some of my favorite little critters here, is to show people that cockroaches and tarantulas can be very pretty. So our facility was designed by Ralph Charlton and Sunny Ramaswamy. Ralph Charlton was a professor at our department for around 10 years, I think. People that have worked with the insect zoos probably have seen him at the Invertebrates in Captivity Conference. Ralph Charlton has moved on to the private sector, where he designed and is managing a large butterfly house in New York State. If you've met Ralph, you realize that that's really what he was meant to do. He's been my inspiration, and I only hope I can live up to him and the way that he promoted insects and entomology to the public. My favorite story about Ralph is being at someone's house. We had a candidate for a professor job at the university, and everyone else was in the living room, having drinks or eating hors d'oeuvres, and you go into the kitchen, and there's Ralph sitting on the floor, surrounded by kids, and has a tarantula out on the floor. So that's what Ralph did, and that's what he does best. We are located on campus in a renovated section of an old building, and we are surrounded by the K-State Gardens. I have some nice shots of that to show you. We have been open to the public, at least on a limited basis, since 1999. It was officially dedicated by the president of the university in 2002, so we are a fairly new facility. We do have a close relationship with the rest of the campus. The layout of the zoo, we only have 1,100 square feet of display area, so the layout was very important to use that space efficiently. And students in an architecture class actually competed to see who was going to have the layout that we used. We have had MBA students that have written us a business plan as part of a practicum course and received credit. I have an interior design professor who is helping us with ideas for an expansion into another level of the building. And I do have some future projects in mind with a forestry professor who teaches environmental interpretation classes. So we do have a campus tours office that kind of schools call them and look for things to do on campus. They do send out our brochure to all the public schools and any other groups that request it within a 100-mile radius of Manhattan, Kansas. And we actually get more calls than we can fill, much like they do at OSU. We schedule up to 5 tours a day that are 45 minutes to an hour, and that's just all we can handle with the staff and the space that we have. So in the spring, if you don't call by spring break, you won't probably get a field trip to the insect zoo in April and May. So other things that we share our visitors with include some of the other things on campus. We do have a beautiful facility that we work around. We have this old dairy barn that's been partially restored. The path to our front door, beautiful brick with all the plantings. And our front door sits right under a large elm tree right in the middle of the K-State Gardens. Like I said, we only have 1,100 square feet of display space that's open to the public. We do have another 400 to 500 square feet that we use for rearing in our containment lab. But within this space, it's set up pretty well to maximize the efficiency. Our fire marshal number, our occupancy level is only 49. So I'll show you some pictures later. You know, sometimes we are really getting close to that occupancy, probably going over it during special events. We do have some really nice things that were designed by Mick Hillary. I believe he's in Nebraska now with a company that designed some of these naturalistic things with the trees and the plants that really add. The front, this is the entrance to the zoo when you first walk in. So this is supposed to represent a flooded mangrove forest area. And Ralph's idea, which I'm still working on developing all the signage for, kind of sets the theme for the whole exhibit, talking about how someone once found 40 species of ants on, you know, one tree in the Amazon forest. So just to show what we're trying to promote as far as conservation. Our honeybee colony is a really popular display with the kids. We've had the same queen now for about 2 years. We've finally kind of gotten the hang of getting them through the winter in the Midwest. So, and I agree with Randy, everyone that's in second grade thinks that all the queen bees are born with a red dot on their back. We have a mock kitchen area that's very popular with the kids because it's very interactive. So if you open up the refrigerator door, there's a cutout that shows American cockroaches that are kind of crawling around under the refrigerator. The drawers open and we can hide various things in there. Up in the cupboards, we have a lot of stored product pests that are in the food stuff. And then in this area too, we keep a lot of cookbooks. People can look through to see all the different recipes. And then a lot of products. I found some products I ordered from Thailand. Those are actual preserved silkworms and mole crickets in salt brine with cooking instructions on the back. You know, stir fry in soy sauce and add pepper to taste, I think. And then we do like to keep a lot of things that have carmine or cochineal in them on the ingredient labels. And that's kind of another discovery. You know, they'll just pick it up and look at the label and they'll say, oh, what's cochineal and why is it in my food? So it gives us a chance to teach them about that sort of thing too. Because we do receive money from Extension, we really do try to have lots of information on local insects and all the things that the calls to the Extension Service, you know, I kind of try to be ready for that. You know, the cicada killer wasps are out. You know, you got to be ready to quiet everyone's fears about those. Or people that live in rocky areas in Kansas get scorpions in their basement. So we have an Extension publication that quiets their fears. And then also in this area, we do try to keep some of the local insects on this table, but this is where we have our display that has our pinned specimens of the insects in Kansas. So a lot of times people can come in and, oh, I saw this beetle in my backyard and it scared me and it was big and it was, yeah, had long antenna or something. So you can, that kind of gives you a way to take them to that display and say, okay, let's narrow this down. You know, what exactly did you see? And then you can tell them about what they had. And none of this would happen without our donors. These are the three biggest donors we have. Mr. Martini, our local beekeeper, he really provides all this material and he helps us to maintain the colony, puts in quite a few hours during some of our campus events. He'll come in for the whole day and just answer questions. On the bottom, on the other side, on the right, we have a local pest control operator, and he gave us the money to build the mock kitchen with all the appliances and the cabinetry, and he gives us an annual gift that helps out a lot. And then on the top, we have someone that graduated with a PhD in our department in 1966 that's also been very helpful with his gifts to our cause. As far as staffing, if you're going to run something like this on a small budget, I'll kind of show you how we've done it. As the Insect Zoo coordinator, I hire undergraduate student labor, and between me and the students, we pretty much run all the day-to-day operations. Then we do have our Insect Zoo director and zoo committee, which are members of our department. And then we do rely on professors and graduate students from the department when we have really high visitor numbers. So I want to mention my undergraduate students because they are really indispensable to how we run it on such a small budget. All of our undergraduate student workers have federal work study awards, so we're paying them $7 to $8 an hour, but it's actually costing us more like $4 an hour, which is makes a huge difference. And they do all the care and the feeding under my training, and they do manage a lot of the walk-in visitors. And then in a pinch, Sam here on the bottom has worked with us for about 2.5 years, and she can give a guided tour in a pinch. She's very attentive to what we're doing, and she knows a lot about all the displays, and she's really been a lifesaver sometimes when tour guides haven't showed up. And then the departmental volunteers, they definitely help us just doing things like sitting at the front desk and greeting visitors. When we have special campus events like Family Day and Open House at K-State, when we have very high visitor numbers, they're very valuable. And then they help giving the guided tours to the school groups that come to visit us. And as was mentioned in the introduction, I think this is really valuable for the graduate students and some of the professors too, this experience and interaction with the visitors and being able to communicate as a scientist what we do and why it's important on a level to the person that's coming in off the street that doesn't have any idea what we do. So this is a shot from our last open house. Between 10 and 4 that day for 6 hours, we had 674 people through our display with a fire marshal number of 49. It was touch and go there for a while, but we did manage to get through it. It was one in, one out there for a while. But that's a huge draw for us during the open house. We have all these people on campus, and we have become a favorite destination. So the departmental volunteers, these are examples of graduate students. Over here on the left, they're doing some cockroach races to entertain the kids. And on the right, we're doing face painting and making antenna out of little pipe cleaners for people to wear around. The insect cooking, people come back every year. If we didn't do it, they would be mad at us. They come back every year asking, I want to eat some fried mealworms. So this is Dr. Smith, one of our professors, cooking up some fried mealworms, and one of our happy people that are waiting in line to eat them. Halloween is also a good time where we pull some of the grad students over. We like to get dressed up and see how many kids we can get to touch all the creepy bugs. We do have to charge a fee. For a short time, we were we charged $1 a person for the guided tours, and then it was just free will donation for everyone that came in. And eventually we got to the point where we had to up that a little. So right now we for $2 a person, which really isn't much anyway, you can come in and look around for as long as you want. For $3 a person, you call ahead and you schedule 45 minutes to an hour with a member of our department, and you get to get out some of the live things. We guarantee a lot of contact with the live things, and that's the big seller on the tours from what we've gotten from our feedback. So because all the visitors come to us and we don't go to them, it is very seasonal. We never really know how many people are going to walk into our door during 10 and 4 during the week. It can range, you know, from an average of 10 people a day in January to an average of 50 people a day in July. And it's a challenge to keep up with that. Family Day and Open House, again, that's at least something we can plan for, but we have a huge number of people that will show up in a very short amount of time there. So our total visitor numbers aren't as impressive as some of these other places, but we are still growing. We're going to project to hit 8,000 people this year by the end of December, which for our small space is actually pretty impressive. So this kind of breaks it down by month. We're pretty slow when it's cold outside in the Midwest and it's lots of snow on the ground. Everything peaks in April when all the kids want to do field trips at the end of the school year, plus the open house. And then we stay pretty busy through the whole summer. The types of visitors, a large portion of them are just the walk-ins that we can't really plan for. Another good chunk are the guided tours. And then we do separate out in our admission count senior citizens. We do let a small slice in for free since we are kind of an extension of the department. We use this as a classroom, and there are a lot of groups that we let in as extensions of that. So how do we communicate the vision? The biggest thing we do is really, we have static displays, but a lot of it is just personal communication with the visitors. So I contacted a forestry professor to get a textbook about environmental interpretation and pulled out that, which I think really shows what we do. So with the guided tours, you know, these are the basic things that we like to do, but then all of our tour guides are members of the department, so there's not really a script. We just kind of make it up as we go along, and we talk about whatever we want to. So some of my favorite things and things that I have seen have been the most effective involve them in the process. Like someone said at the beginning of the tour, I always ask, well, this is the insect zoo, but you know, we should probably call this the arthropod zoo. Can any of the kids tell me some things here that aren't insects? We like to make sounds, pretend like we're hissing cockroaches. We like to do the bee dance, you know, get the kids moving, keep them interested. Recounting personal experiences, got a story about that. And then by far the most popular, of course, is the contact with the live arthropods. So this is a new trick that I learned just this last fall. We have all these Chinese mantids that are turned into us, and we have a large colony of American cockroaches. So in the beginning of the tour, I pull out an American cockroach, let everyone get a good look at it, and then I feed it to the Chinese mantis. And in the 45 minutes that the kids are there, there's pretty much nothing left by the time they're done. And you can see by the young man's face that that's pretty interesting if you're a kid. Recounting personal experiences, there's lots of professors that tell stories, you know, about their experiences in entomology. My favorite, and I'm going to warn you, the next slide is a little bit graphic, was I got a chance to hike through the jungles of Belize a couple summers ago, and fortunately, I came back with three botfly larvae growing in my head. So the older kids get to see the pictures of the medical procedure of cutting these out of my head, and they just love it. It's not all shock and awe, but that is a very effective tool. And then, of course, just the contact with the live arthropods, they love it. So I have several slides of that showing during our guided tours. Usually we just get out one thing at a time, kind of pass it down the line. Some more pictures during Halloween. And the kids just love it. The contact and not being afraid really helps. We do other things on campus and off campus to reach the public, though I'd say most of it, the most important thing we do would be with the guided tours. We do have a survey. Real quick, I'll just show you some of the highlights from the survey. According to the survey, we're doing a great job. And 31% of our respondents, without asking specifically about touching, always say that's one of the most positive things for the kids in the school groups, and that's what people always come back for. We have a lot of repeat visitors. We get little clippings out of local newspapers from people that write about their field trips to the insect zoo. And then some of the comments from our visitor surveys kind of, again, illustrate that we're doing a good job of interpretation, not just providing information. The last one I want to highlight real quick, if you've met Robert Bobby Brown, he was a member of our department for quite a while and a wonderful volunteer at the insect zoo. Moved on to Purdue to work on beetles, which was his passion. But this was a comment about him from one of our surveys about how passionate he was and how it really showed to the visitors. So, and again, a quote from the textbook from the forestry professor, just talking about that passion and the fact that people see that enthusiasm in us as we communicate is really what it takes to make something like this work. And kids are passionate about bugs. Well, weird bugs. So, thank you very much.